Hey, 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 it's me, Katie here. Grab a notebook and a cuppa and join me in the Sociology Staff Room. Hello and welcome to the Sociology Staff Room. I've got Shahina here with me today and we'll be talking about culture and identity. But before we start, thank you for coming on and sparing some of your valuable time. Please tell me a little bit about yourself before we start in your professional setting.
Okay, so I have a Bachelor of Science degree in sociology for my undergrad, and then I pursued social science for my teaching. I've been teaching for 8 years in a mixed comprehensive setting. I've still been at the same school. And yeah, I'm really passionate about sociology. I also teach psychology at A-level and recently at GCSE too.
Amazing. I love the passion. Everyone we have on, you know, like, I'm assuming all teachers are passionate, but I feel like sociology or social science teachers are more passionate about it. I think because we're doing what we talk about, and we can shoehorn it into any conversation. So something like becomes.
Well, this is it. Just earlier today, I teach a student for both sociology and psychology. And in the psychology lesson, she was saying something and she was like, Miss, it's not all about sociology. And I was like, it is. I was like, the fact that you're saying that means you're in a state of false class consciousness. We were laughing about it. And I think that's it. I think, like you said, when we are passionate about it, obviously we're like, we're living, breathing sociology. This comes up. It's relevant. How can you say it's not relevant? But it's up.
Yeah, definitely. I know that, just to put a bit of background, I met you as part of the Grade Boosters. You were a school that was there with a strong foundation, and I think we just sort of were talking about sociology, obviously, and we had a shared passion for our subject. The one we're talking about today is culture and identity. We both teach culture and identity. I was like, another fellow culture and identity teacher. Tell me, first of all, what made you opt for that? Have you always taught culture and identity, or did you teach family first? Where did that come about?
So the thing is, I'm actually quite new to teaching culture and identity because at our school, we've always had two teachers. And we teach education, obviously, and our option has been culture for the longest time. Over 20 years here, and I believe the person that originally opted for it, the subject lead at the time, just found it to be a lot more interesting and different, in the sense that we teach family obviously at GCSE, and students are always like, why don't we not do it at A-level? But they found the content, I don't know, a bit more boring at A-level for family, and just how engaging and current culture and identity can be. I think that's the main reason why it was chosen, and we've stuck with it. And personally, it was a topic that I loved at A-level. So I was quite excited to teach it myself and have been,
So have you taught any other, so that sort of option choice?
And literally just, we've always done culture and identity and education, but we've always enjoyed it. Students struggle with it at first, come to sort of like it towards the end. But yeah, it's worked for us. We've enjoyed it. Students have enjoyed it. We just find it quite interesting.
It's got such a contemporary relevance. I know that that's what I personally find is that, I mean, I suppose that's where the weaknesses come from. We'll talk about them in a minute, but ultimately there is, like, if you prep your resources, there's an expectation that you're going to have to slightly prep them again for the following year to put stuff that's contemporary in, which for me, I love, because that keeps things passionate. I don't know how you feel about that. I mean, obviously, we're going to talk about that. Maybe go straight into the strengths and weaknesses. Obviously, you've mentioned that the strength is contemporary, particularly for those people that teach GCSE something different, they're not doing the same again, which potentially could be a bit boring. Are there any other strengths around teaching cultural identity that you found?
I think I have to talk about a challenge to talk about the strength of it. I think initially a lot of our students, for some of them who have had no prior foundational knowledge of like the key concepts that run throughout, even as things like, you know, primary socialization or norms and values, and I feel like this is such a unit that is really heavy in terms of like the concepts. They struggle because they find that there's not a streamlined flow, if you like, in terms of the units, where it's like, this is the education and gender section, and now we can do a gender question and we're kind of done with it. Where it's like, no, actually, you know, like last year's question on sexuality and consumption, like bringing together two completely difficult, like I've really struggled with it myself. Two completely different subsections, which obviously does happen in other units, but I feel like the strength of it after is once they've had that year to sort of come to terms with like those concepts, and then they're obviously encouraged and they come across it again in education and then like in reference and context. By the time they get to year 13, I feel like it clicks a bit better. So my cohort that are going to sit their exams for the first time this year with me, I feel like they're understanding it better now when we've assessed them in their mocks and their PPEs, because we're touching back on it and they've had more time to truly understand those concepts. But at the beginning, the challenge is that it feels quite fragmented for them, if you like. And they're like, how do we bring that together? And that's where I'm really trying to help them understand that it's all connected, and your analysis points, and where are the synoptic links, and, you know, how can this impact, you know, we haven't even taught consumption yet, but I was trying to say, but how could this be a factor that then impacts this, you know, how, why, you know, asking all of those questions. So I don't know if I've answered your question, but it's, that's the strength and the challenge of it. I think helping them to see the bigger picture that we can see, but sometimes it's tough for us as well, because sometimes I'm like, how could they put these two topics together? And, you know, trying to think of different ways to question them, to get them thinking outside of the box as well.
Yes, that's what you said, like, you're thinking outside the box.
What do you think, in terms of...
Yeah, I mean, I feel like exactly the same. I feel that strength is also the weakness. I think the strengths are, like you said, the fact that it's contemporary, the fact that students can engage. I feel that the strength becomes the benefit... The weakness becomes the benefit in year 13, like you've said. Like, I think... For the students feels a bit abstract, but I think, like you said, it's quite concept heavy, which I think it then gives them the depth for that, particularly structure and action debate as well, because obviously look at the culture and then the identities and how they're shaped. I think the one that gets the students is the concepts of self, like they're like, whoa, yeah. I haven't chosen to take a philosophy, it feels a bit deep. But I think that really helps them when you do teach theory and methods, particularly obviously the theory bit. And then obviously when you go into year 13, those sort of themes of culture, identity carry on with class, gender, ethnicity all the way through. Like not a single topic doesn't talk about those issues. Obviously, I know that sexuality and disability are only spoken about in that, and they're not, say, spoken about in crime in the same way. Although,
but then we've got globalization as well, which is also like a synoptic kind of link that comes up across. Yeah.
So I totally say the same as you, really. I think that there's that sort of strength. I think the other weakness for some people, potentially, like I said earlier, might be the making of the resources for some people, in the sense that you've got new data coming out, so like British Attitude Surveys and obviously census data, but ultimately I think that's true for any topic you're looking at, so like new data coming out for family. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm glad that you mentioned that, because I think it is tougher, and this is why I was so glad when I found, like, obviously I've been listening to the podcast, but I feel like the resources are a bit harder to come by when it comes to culture and identity. Like, of course, we've got the textbooks, but a lot of them are outdated as well in terms of not covering a lot. And sometimes I find that the exam, like the actual AQA mark schemes, are not as helpful in terms of some of the sociologists that are on there. I'm like, I've not come across them across any of the books that I've been using. And then obviously you're like, do I read the JSTOR actual articles? And sometimes it's like there's so much, it's a minefield, there's so much there, but it's like, what do you use? So even today I was like teaching with my year 12 class about hegemonic masculinity and femininity. And then obviously we look at sexuality later, but then I thought it would be good to obviously bring in toxic masculinity, and I was talking about double standards in like the media and the music industry, and then we were watching a video about Taylor Swift and like her talking about how she's held to a different account or in comparison to men, and just there's just so much, and then a whole TED talk on why boys will be boys and why it's harmful, and then there's just so much that where I'm passionate, I'm like, I really want to just, all of it's relevant obviously, but how do you streamline it, how do you, you know, stick to the concepts, and then which sociologists are the most relevant, and my students struggle with that. So I didn't realize until you said, just generally, I think I've not examined A level before, I've done GCSE, and I thought, like, I was always really big on, obviously, like, you need the sociologists and the concepts. I think from my understanding now, of course you need sociologists, but the concepts are more important, and their understanding obviously of those concepts, analysis, impact, and all these other skills. So I think that's already shaped my approach in terms of knowing, okay, how do I streamline it, what do I focus on, what's more important. But yeah, you're right, like the resources I think I personally struggle with, and then obviously we have to be up to date with current issues, of course, and a lot of the times students are like, they're big on what's trending for my class anyway, in terms of, I don't know, like TikTok and social media, but sometimes not like the real issues. I'm like, no, like, are you guys reading newspapers, or do you see what's happening here or what's going on here? And obviously it's those real contemporary examples that they can used to really show their depth and application, but sometimes we have to be the ones obviously to suggest that to them. So yeah, like you said, it's with any subject. I just feel like there's more out there, more support in terms of education, for instance, or family, as opposed to, like, I've been searching for model answers or examiner reports. So, you know, when they do like the marking and it's like, we didn't do culture because not enough schools picked it. And I'm like, damn. So, yeah, that's a challenge.
It's hard, isn't it? I think, like you said, the resources, like, I feel like with the sort of the making of the resource, but then like, if you enjoy your sociology, which clearly you do, then actually that's the benefit, is you can keep on researching it. And I think there's another danger there. And we had Professor Pereira on like last year, and she was saying that the danger with some social media, obviously not social media itself, but I suppose the usage of that, is because cultural identity is so contemporary, it's easy to get fake news, which isn't really like, so I think when we were talking about the concept of gender and sexuality, and so the sort of TikTok definition is very different from the sociological definitions, and how they, the good thing is that students are willing to have those debates because of social media, which they wouldn't have been before, but ultimately they've got it slightly wrong. So it's unpicking some of that might be a little bit of a challenge as well. You mentioned about, and I've just inquired, because I think you sort of given the hint of when you teach it, when in the sequence do you teach cultural identity?
So because we've got the two teachers, we start two topics simultaneously. So usually we just have a crash course of like week, you know, like introduction, especially for anyone that hasn't done it before. This year we approached it differently with having 2 weeks looking at introducing them to the theories. So the theory aspect, and we'll come to methods later, whereas usually we save theories and methods for the end. So after we did that, I'm still on culture and identity. So I've been doing it basically since end of September. I have 57 lessons in my scheme of work. How many do you have? And I'm only on about 32. So I'm only on about 32. So I predict that I should finish by about the Easter, or even 1 week after Easter. But obviously all the 57 lessons obviously include all of those opportunities for like exam work, their PPEs, timed opportunities and things like that. That's why it's so long. What about you? Because I feel like that sounds quite long when I say it like that. And then my colleague has already finished
how many like hours and things come out of the school week and stuff. So I personally would teach it next to each other because I'm a sole teacher. But I suppose it depends on the different schools and what they do. But I suppose my question for you is, how do you find, because obviously you're going into something quite abstract, which is cultural identity. So there's a lot of schools will do education first, then cultural identity. But there is no harm in doing it as a sequence. Every school will do it slightly differently. How do you find the students approach it when they're sort of going straight in as with the theories of potentially culture and identity, and then potentially looking at some of the sort of the abstract terms? How do you find the students take it? And at what point do you think they're like, oh, I get what you're talking about?
Yeah, I think by about now, so we're in February. So I think they were really, some of them were really hating it at the start, in all honesty. They were really struggling. And like I said, because it's just a lot of isolated terms or concepts or completely new terms like folk culture, and them having no sort of understanding of that kind of culture. But now I can see some of my students are making those links. So when I was talking about hegemonic masculinity, for example, it was really great because some of the mid and higher ability students are able to make that link between what we're doing in culture and identity and then education. And where I've taught education as well, we were able to talk about Willis's Lads, for instance, and how, you know, their approaches to girls and relationships and the double standards that existed there. So I feel like it does take, I would say, a couple of 3 to 4 months. Once we hit January, February, then they can start seeing, okay, the bigger picture and how these concepts. And I think once again, it's kind of down to us sometimes, isn't it, to make them realize this is the same subject. I know it feels completely different, but the concepts are the same. And I think obviously where we have a whole section on socialization and we look at education, it's nice to make those links with like Althusser or ideological state apparatus, but it's, you know, it's relevant for both. Sorry, what was your question?
I personally, I've talked to different combinations and spoken to lots of different teachers. And I think irrespective of whether you do it simultaneously to two topics or whether you do it in sequence or whether you teach, I know that some schools I've heard that do year 13 material before year 12. I know that people play it around lots of different ways. I don't think there's a rhyme or a reason. I think it, obviously it's down to how the teacher and the student
Which
feel.
Do you teach first then as a sole teacher?
I teach education and then culture and identity.
Okay.
But I have done what you've done before, where you've had more teachers within the department. And I think irrespective, students, it's about this time when it was the penny drops. Yeah. And obviously there's going to be students within that as an average. There's going to be students that get it before Christmas, and there's going to be people that do it a little bit later. But as an average, I think this is sort of the time when they're like, sort of they've touched upon a range of concepts, and then they're sort of like, oh, I see what this is all about now. I don't know if you feel the same, but I feel like sociology is difficult and challenging the language to begin with. And then once you've got past that, actually really gets easier because it is so synoptic. Whereas I think maybe for other subjects, you learn and learn something different all the time. Whereas actually, like, you're going to be looking at socialisation, like you said, in education, you potentially will look at it in regards to crime and deviance as a way of preventing crime. It's not something that is disappears, like it's there all the time. Whereas in other subjects, I think there's a bit more distinct information. Just another question around, you said, mentioned how long you take to teach it and how you sort of, I think that's another potential challenge, because obviously it's something you're passionate about. How, I suppose it's a question that I think you've already potentially answered, but how do you keep it succinct? So, like, how do you know for yourself what to keep and what to not keep? Because obviously, like, you've mentioned gender, and you talked about, like, toxic masculinity, you've talked about hegemonic masculinity, you watch your TED talk, and there is so much information out there. How do you stop yourself just going on a... to indulge it, because it is
onto my own TED talk. I think this is a work in progress, obviously. Like I said, this is literally, I've got my year 13 cohort that are going to sit it, and then I'm refining. Like, I've already made massive changes. Like, last year I thought, oh, yeah, this is good, and then I'm looking at it this year, and like, my class sizes are bigger as well, so I've not been able to do things in the same way. Like, I had 10 last year and 27 this year, so it's been, even that, like, you obviously have to teach it differently, where you have more opportunities for discussion, maybe with a smaller group, you have to, like you said, refine it and keep it more succinct. How do I do that? I don't know if I'm doing it right, or let's have a chat about our results. I think what I try and do is, I think obviously there's always the opportunities for further research. So I will always still plan more, whether that be like the videos or the additional information, the articles. But those, I think I will often target more towards like the students that get onto the Think Harder, or the ones that have already got the concepts, or the more higher ability students. I often do share my PowerPoints with them as well, and I say, like, obviously if you've got an interest in this and this is an area that you would look into, there's more information here. I think sometimes I do have to try and streamline it to the exam and look at mark schemes and think, when I'm teaching you an area, it could come up as a 10 marker, it could come up as a 20 marker as well. So making sure I've covered enough points that if it was a standalone like essay by itself, that they've got enough sort of concepts to discuss it from a variety of viewpoints. I know that's a vague answer in itself. Obviously, you try and use your perspectives to guide you, and at least you've got 2 to 3 points, or at least 2 to 3 concepts now. But it is hard. How do you sort of do that?
I pretty much do the same as you. I use the teacher guide, and as I think we've had Stephen Taylor on here already talking about it. But ultimately, these guides, as we've said before, the names are indicative names, they're not the names you have to do, so obviously people have different names, but I sort of use that as a guide to make sure that I've covered most of those things. And then, like you said, like, where it's easy to indulge particular areas that you feel quite passionate about, I ensure that I put on a separate platform for students to look at as well. And if there is scope, then we can, and I do, you know, you want to stretch and challenge your students, you want to keep it contemporary, and there's always new stuff coming out, but I also use sort of the enrichment activities for that. I also run a like little debate society as well. So that's quite nice to allow that scope. But I suppose it's getting that balance between ensuring you've covered enough and everything is taught, because ultimately you don't want to get to the end of year 13 and you're like scrambling for time.
Well, so I suppose this is it. Sorry,
yeah, to cut you off. It's organisation, I think.
Sorry. You're saying about organisation.
No, I just said organisation, sorry.
Yeah. So I was saying that when we looked at the sexuality and consumption question, even when I taught it last year, I think my understanding of it was quite limited, and that's obviously limiting for the students. Like, we knew about the pink pound, I used the textbook, I did a little bit of research, but I personally, and again, I'm guilty, I had no idea about rainbow washing, which is something that you were speaking about. So I spoke about queer baiting, we spoke about celebrities, obviously it kind of links in. But again, when it was mentioned in the mark scheme, I was like, oh, what's that? And then you were talking about it. And then I've like done more research. So thankfully, hopefully my year 13s aren't doomed, because we did that and I was with them. So where I didn't originally teach them the concept of rainbow washing, now in our revision sessions and exam work, we've been able to incorporate it. But yeah, it is it is tough. And I think I'm definitely trying to look at the mark schemes to think, okay, knowing a couple of those sociologists, obviously the concepts, like I said, a lot of them are fine, but sometimes I can't, I'm like, where are they getting them from? Like, I don't know. I've never come across this study before.
I think it is just indicative material, isn't it? It's the stuff that's out there, and thinking, well, actually, there's other stuff as well. And even all the indicative points, like, for example, Raymond Washington, you wouldn't get less marks for not including that if you spoke about something different. Yeah. I think the biggie for all the option topics is that 10 mark without the item. And I suppose my last question to you is, how do you prepare your students for that? Because, like the example you've given, which I know that people found a challenging question, which is sexuality and consumption. The point of that 10 mark is you can literally pick anything from that topic and just like merge it together and go, ta-da! How do you prepare for that question?
So I am planning on preparing for that question by sort of creating links. So like taking the different units, and obviously we've already got all the past questions that we've done, and we've already compiled a list of like, this is the different topics that have been assessed together. But trying to think outside the box, thinking, okay, how would we approach a question? So let's make up our own questions essentially. And how would we answer a question if it was testing you on this area with this area? So kind of thinking outside the box and trying to find those links. So that is something I plan to do with my Year 13 students. I feel like that's something they can do once they've got a strong foundation and a better understanding of the concepts to make those links. And that's definitely something we're going to be doing just before Easter or just after Easter. And that's going to be their exam practice rather than just answering, because they've done a lot of the questions that are on there now. Now it's about making those links and how can those things affect each other, impact analysis, that kind of thing. What about yourself?
Exactly the same. It's a hard one to teach it until you've taught all of it, because ultimately it could be the last thing like consumption and the first thing you've taught, which is global culture or something like that. But pretty much the same as you. I've got flashcards with a lot of the key concepts on there, well, actually all of the concepts for that unit. And I just get students to walk around with each other and get them to match each other and say how they link, how can one have an impact on another, positive and negative. And just keep on doing it. I often do that as a starter activity. But ultimately, yeah, like you said, I think thinking outside the box and getting students to think, I think it's something that's really important.
And I think the hectic teacher, I don't know if she does culture and identity, but I know we're like crime resources, for instance. I know she's got starters, but it's just concepts and it's that kind of thing where they have it in a sheet and it's like, we'll make the link. And then when you draw your line, how are they linked? So I think that kind of thing, whether it be an activity they do by themselves or a whole class thing, or you know, making it fun as a game, a discussion thing. It's about them seeing that all of these things are interlinked, even if they're not obviously linked in the way that we teach you. And like I said, I know that this is something that with time as well, I will, like I said, it depends on how limited we are as well. Because how long have you been teaching culture and identity?
Oh, I stopped and started. So I taught it when I first started teaching for about 10 years. Then I stopped because there was more. There was more than one class, so I taught something different. And then I'm started teaching it again. So I love it. I think it's an amazing topic for exactly the same reasons you said, that I think it's really contemporary. But again, it's not for everyone, and it's not for every student as well. So definitely. Oh, it's so good to bounce ideas. Sorry, go for it.
No. I was going to say, you say the 10 mark without the item, although a lot of them also struggle with the 10 markers with the item because they're so obviously specific, and you must use the hooks that are in the item, and obviously it's limiting in those ways as well, whereas I feel like there is at least more scope and you get different answers at least if you know the topic area for the ones without the item. It's just obviously depends on the student, but you're saying.
No, I just say it's practice, I think, for the students, and thinking outside the box, which is what you've said. I think there's just such important skills for students to develop. I was just talking, we've got Craig Gelly, we just had on as a guest earlier, and he was basically saying that, you know, I think the beauty of sociology is it's not teaching students to think in a very a very sort of still cereal box, like pre-prepared answers. You can't do that with sociology. It's getting students to think, so not one essay will look like another essay. But ultimately, it's a skill they've got to develop. And I think some of those particular questions, like the 10 markers, really stretch and challenge students for that as well. So,
Exactly, and the point that you're actually just saying, actually, when we were looking at obviously mass culture and the idea, Marxist idea of people being passive and uncritical and unquestioning, and I think, as I was mentioning earlier, at that literally the week that I was teaching that was the weekend of the protests that were happening, Israel and Gaza, and it was just like obviously it's a contemporary situation, it's happening, it's unfolding before our eyes right now. And it was a great opportunity to just sort of get students to think about, well, how does this fit in with what we're talking about? You know, that is a mass population. There's, you know, over 10,000 people going to the streets, exercising their right to protest. So what does that say? You know, what are people protesting on what grounds? How does this tie in with sociology, of course? And I think it's that kind of thing, isn't it? How it's about getting students to think critically and just having that critical eye and that lens. So there isn't a set answer. There are different ways of seeing it. You know, we're just talking about citizen journalism and, you know, Amnesty International, a range of things, a range of different answers and ways of viewing it, but giving them those tools to think about and question the things that are happening around the world. So I think you're definitely right. It's not just about this is the set answer. They can apply it in any way, but, you know, question, challenge. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Question and challenge. How, what are definitely the sort of the key questions that come out in sociology. Mm-hmm. I appreciate your time. I know that you're also teaching today, so I appreciate you taking some time out of your day to talk to me about cultural identity. And I'd love to, I know that in the Facebook pages, I'd love to hear more people that want to take sociology, who are teaching a cultural identity, what their thoughts are, do contribute once you've listened to the podcast. It's good to share ideas of how people are doing it and what bits they find are working really well with their cohort students. But thank you ever so much for your time.
And no worries. Thank you so much for having me. And I know that we'll definitely be in contact still about culture and identity.
Definitely. Thank you. You take care. Look after yourself.
You too.
The Sociology Staff Room is brought to you by Tutor2U Sociology. Find us at tutor2u.net/sociology or follow us on Twitter at Tutor2USoc or Instagram at Tutor2USoc. You can also join our very lively Facebook groups for sociology teachers. See you soon.